of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. 1, 2, 3, beat it!
Pay Me by the Philharmonic, and you're listening to Stories with Stella. Thanks for tuning in. I felt like that song was especially appropriate because today I want to address some misconceptions around workplace safety, appropriate pay for work, and all of the crap that we either have to put up with, choose to put up with, or can choose not to put up with in different workplace environments. In particular, I want to address the difference in kind of the stereotypes around what some people refer to as, quote, normal jobs, like retail, service industry, customer service, trades, those kinds of things, versus alternative means of income like stripping or sex work. As it stands now, any industry that is as unregulated as a lot of sex work is going to pose a certain amount of threat and risk than jobs where you are an employee protected by certain government rights. However, we live in capitalist America, and while that very nice fantasy of employee rights being respected, most businesses do not actually follow the rules and take care of their employees. So a big difference in a lot of employee jobs versus independent contractor jobs, for me in particular, was boundaries and my ability to set boundaries. So as an employee, if I'm working for any kind of business that wants to maintain a good rapport with their customers, a lot of places adopt this attitude of the customer is always right, even if they're not. You still kind of have to cater to the customer's needs and treat them like they are right, because you're not representing yourself, you're representing the brand or the company that you are employed by. Versus as an independent contractor, which all strippers are in the state of Oregon at least, we have the ability to set our own personal boundaries. So regardless necessarily of what the rules of the club are, every dancer has the right to set her own boundaries and not let any club or customer cross them. And that's one of the beauties of being an independent contractor, is we can take on the mentality that the customer is usually wrong. And we can tell them that. We can educate them. And if they're not open to being educated, then we can tell them to F off and get out of the club. And a lot of times people will come into the club, and this is a very Oregon thing, where they come in just for a drink. They treat it like a bar. In which case I will tell people, hey, do you have any money to tip while you're here? And if they say, no, I don't have any money, then I'll say, great, finish your drink and head on out, because this is not a bar. And I can say that, and I can risk that customer getting kind of upset with me for being straight up and rude. To me, I cannot waste either of our times, cut to the chase, let them know what's going on, and that they're not allowed to watch me for 2 hours while they drink a PBR and not tip. So there's this amazing power and control that being an independent contractor can really give you. And the amount of misconceptions as well around workplace safety being more of an issue in the clubs, in strip clubs, or in sex work than in any other kind of employee job is also really mind-boggling to me, because in the club, if somebody tries to touch me without my consent, I can have the bouncer kick them out. Versus if I'm working at a restaurant and a customer keeps trying to touch my butt when I walk by the table, I have to just kind of smile and hope that they still give me a tip, even though I'm not furthering their advances or flirting back or something like that. And I've worked at many, many places, restaurants, retail, where somebody, either an employee, another employee, or a customer has been harassing me or assaulting me in some way. And I've mentioned it to management and management kind of says, oh, we're sorry that happened. Hopefully they don't come back again soon, but in case they do, we need to make sure that you leave them with a nice smile. And so I have to give people a free drink after they try to touch me inappropriately, or if they cross my boundary, I have to still represent the company and make that customer feel happy when they leave. Versus as an independent contractor, if somebody is rude to me, if somebody crosses my boundary, I can tell them right then and there that they are in the wrong and it was not okay. And they need to compensate me for the time that they either wasted or took advantage of, and then leave my establishment. Because as an independent contractor, we are also paying a rental fee to work at the club. Again, it's something a lot of people don't realize, and a lot of people have this thought of, oh, it's easy money, just go to the strip club and you make easy money, you don't have to work hard. But every strip club has a fee. It's called a stage fee or a house fee that the dancers have to pay in order to rent the club, because we're not employed by the club. We're an independent contractor like a hairdresser or a nail tech. We do not get paid by the hour. We have to pay the establishment, pay the bar, the club, to rent out their stage, their private rooms, their bar, to conduct our business. We start the shift owing the business money. Versus any other kind of customer service job where I go, no matter how slow it is, no matter how rude people are or how much of a bad mood I'm in, I'll still make maybe $80 that day. At the strip club, as an independent contractor, a lot of times the fee can be anywhere from $10 to $100. And that the first $10 or $100 we make has to go to paying our rental fee at the club before we even start making any money. And one of the harsh realities a lot of people are not aware of is that strippers sometimes have to pay to work. For example, I used to work at a club downtown. It's a very, very corporate club, and they can set whatever prices they want, and they chose to make their house fee $85 a shift. So every time I went in, I had to pay $85. And that was before I even tipped out any of the staff. Well, one night, I only made about $20. And so I owed the club $65. So I had gone in and worked a 7-hour shift all night in heels, walking up and down stairs, performing for people, having people try to cross my boundaries and having to reinforce my boundaries time and time again, over and over, all night long. And then I had to pay $65 to work. So there are trade-offs between a lot of these independent contractor versus employee things. The main thing that I want to address today is that misconception of workplace safety, and that somehow employee jobs don't pose the same kind of risk that strip clubs do. I have personally been sexually harassed and assaulted at numerous jobs when I was an employee, and there are government offices dedicated to enforcing the rules and the rights that I have as an employee. But most businesses aren't following that. Most HR departments, they're just trying to protect the company, not the employees that work for the company. And so time and time again, my complaints that had been brought up about harassment out in the workplace have been brushed under the rug, or I've been told to smile them off or just get over it. Versus in the club, that doesn't happen. I don't let people cross my boundaries. If they even dare to try, they get an earful and a security guard taking them forcefully out of the club. So there is an incredible power to being your own boss as an independent contractor. It comes at the cost of sometimes you have to pay to work, yes. But I also have the ability to set my own personal boundaries and make sure that I'm reacting the way that I want to when they get crossed, and that I'm allowed to react the way I want to, without fear of repercussion or losing my job because I misrepresented the company that I work for. As an independent contractor, I am the company. I am my own boss. I get to choose how to represent myself every day when I go into work. And I get to choose what my boundaries are. Nobody can tell me what they are. There's a beauty to that that's really misunderstood and is an incredible aspect of the stripping industry that not only has it taught me how to set boundaries in the club, but also how to advocate for myself and set boundaries when I am an employee and I am subject to company rules. I no longer let myself be abused the same way that I used to. Before, I knew that I ever had the power, the ability to set personal boundaries, even when I work for somebody else. And as a result of that, I have worked at many, many different places over the last 10 years, and I've gotten to learn a lot about how management can either choose to take care of their employees or their independent contractors, or completely take advantage of them. And a lot of companies will, because this is America. So I owe a big debt of gratitude to my time and my years in the strip club for teaching me how to set and enforce my boundaries in my personal life and my professional life outside of the club as well. I like to mention these kinds of topics because my time as a dancer, I had many people, including a lot of family and friends, who often would kind of check in with me and say, "So, are you still stripping? Are you gonna get a real job soon? What's your plan?" To which it generally requires a lot of time to address the fact that that question in and of itself is a little mind-boggling, because when people ask dancers, "When are you gonna get a real job?" it's asking them, "When are you gonna start lowering your standards and your boundaries in order to get paid less for a different work that looks more professional on paper?" And it's one that, when people do have the time to listen and hear what I have to say, I like talking to them and saying, "Hey, you know what? That comes from a good place, and I recognize that you have a good heart when you ask me what my plans are after I'm done stripping. But it doesn't really acknowledge the fact that I am doing a job and I'm learning a lot about how to take care of myself while I do this job, and I'm getting paid what I feel like I deserve for it." So to me, that is a solid plan. No, it's not a lifelong plan. It's not long term, but it works for right now. And honestly, at all of the jobs at kitchens and cafes and all different kinds of shops over the years, those were never long-term or lifelong plans and careers either. Those were always just something to get me to the next step. And that is what stripping generally is for people. Whether they can take that one step in 6 months and finish that degree, or help themselves get through the first year of single parenthood, or they choose to do it for 10 years as a means to support themselves or their family, or their dreams, their passions, their careers. I've seen a lot of businesses that were funded by the strip club or by sex work thrive, but only because people were able to take advantage of these opportunities that a lot of other industries and a lot of other employment options don't offer. And this misconception around work and what dictates a real job or a safe job is just one of the many misconceptions that I really like to talk about as a way to educate, but also just normalize the way that we speak about a lot of different industries. And that's not just in regards to sex work, but really any industry that is taboo. And that includes the death industry, certain parts of the trauma industry, the therapy industry. So this topic really can reach any number of industries that are affected by taboos or stigma or stereotype of any kind. And that's what I wanted to share with y'all tonight, just from my own personal experiences. And I want to talk a little bit more about boundaries after this little music break.
Trips to the analyst, stupid motherfucker. Fuck the Hamptons, Maine, and fly infested south of France. got more cash than God can count. So why don't you just die? Choke to death on your damn designer bagel from Baldouche's. No cholesterol, naturally. Sunday New York Times, fuck the Wall Street Journal, and Newsweek, and the lot, including Nation, Village Voice, Guardian, and the rest. Stupid set of privileged motherfuckers think it's fashionable to have an alternative view. If you can, your pencil thin, Evian drinking, calorie counting, caffeine limiting, sodium sparing, Nutrasweet sweetening, rear view mirror preening, carrot nibbling bunny. Go drown in a lake of Diet Coke, fucker. Yo, piss on your polo and your Pavarotti. Fuck all that shit you call music and pretend to enjoy. I got cash. Mega cash. I'm happy with that. Oh, go sit on your ski rack. You little pussy, and let your politically correct pals know that I think you're a dick also. Neutered asshole. And your idea of multiculturalism, Japanese restaurant on Monday, Indian on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, Caribbean. Not too spicy, please. Well, I got stash on stash, and it ain't nouveau cash. Money's in my family for generations. My great, great, great grandfather made the bag selling European slaves in Africa. I got cash, motherfucker. And you can't tell whether or not I'm joking, can you?
Greatest things in life are free, so I invested my money in your company. Like where you wanna go, girl, I'll take you there. Let me put another flower in your hair. When I'm with you, I can't even have a care. Take all of my soul, I'm not afraid to share. Woo, I love you so. like product and purchase. Low like the breeze in these verses. Put all the men in these hearses. I love just watching you work it. Splash on the beat and then surface. Bring it to life and then market. It has me losing my circus. The way you moving. Everybody stopping what they doing. Just to see the way that you be grooving. I made up my mind, there is no choosing. That's my jam.
I have been home. dose of breakfast, doses in the Chex Mix, glimmering on that ergot, shedding my ego and whatnot. Tiny hat crew, water crew, squirrel crew, like to eat mushrooms and giggle like girls do.
Request for Mordor, some of these things are hardcore.
Coming at night, rolling hard,
travel by the tide star.
Let's take a trip as we mash through the A, the whole world spinning as we blast through space. It ain't the destination, it's the path you take. It ain't the destination, it's the path you take. All my friends are freaks. 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 Said if you give me love, then I will give you love. And if you need a glass of water, I could hook it up. Said if you give me love, then I will give you dub. And if I knew you weren't a cop, then I would give you drugs. Said if you give me love, then I will give you love. And if you need a glass of water, I could hook it up. Said if you give me love, then I will give you dub. And if I knew you weren't a cop, then I would give you drugs.
For this next little part, my roommate Hazel is going to join me again, and we're gonna start with some job stuff and more of that, because you work in the death industry, you've also worked in the sex industry, so what do you have to say about, like, misconceptions around jobs?
I think it's really interesting working in a lot of different fields, because I've gotten a lot of experience in terms of people being like, oh, this job's just temporary, right?
And not thinking that it could be like a long-term viable career.
Right. I think it's a big misconception when people assume that sex work is just temporary, or when you age and you lose your looks or you lose your ability to do the physical aspect of it, that you're going to lose your job. But there are a lot of ways, I feel like, to pursue it, and more of, like, the mental part.
And more, like, age-appropriate ways, too. Like, we've even worked with some strippers in their, like, 40s who were killing it, and they just didn't do a lot of pole work. Like, I feel like Six just, like, never did pole work, but she would just walk around or hang out on the ledge, and she knew how to flaunt what she had and not put in too much energy. So I feel like that, like, stereotype that, like, oh yeah, strippers are just gonna age out, like, once you're 25 or 30, nobody's gonna wanna pay you. Some of the best strippers I've seen have been in their 30s. And some of the hottest ones, too. It's a good way to keep your, like,
hashtag 50. Strippers as therapists.
So, like, since being in the death industry, do you feel like talking to people, do they see it in kind of a similar way of, like, it's not a long-term thing, or like, oh, this is a cool thing for you to try out, when are you gonna do something else?
I definitely made it clear to pretty much anybody that asked that this is what feels like my calling, and yes, it's not a phase. But it is kind of just a known thing that death never goes away. So it's going to be an industry that is, there's always going to be a demand for it. So I'm not
absolutely
worried about not having a job in that sense, but...
And there's a lot of room for, like, age range and different positions within the industry, too.
Right, right. I work with a big variety of people in terms of our ages. There's 20-year-olds, there's 60-year-olds, there's people coming out of into retirement, and there's people just starting in the industry, so, yeah.
It's so interesting how a lot of jobs, too, I feel like that people have this misconception that you have to use your degree in order to get a good job, or that you have to use a specific degree in a specific way, when really, like, you can have a degree and go get a certification, and then that can start your whole career.
Exactly. Like, I was worried that I wasn't ever going to use my art degree, which is pretty common fear among artists, I feel
like.
Heard
that from many artists, yeah.
But it turns out it worked in my favor, because mortuary school is the equivalent to an associate's, which is 2 years. And because I had a bachelor's, I got to bypass the school option and just go right into an apprenticeship. So that saved me a lot of debt.
Totally, yeah. That's such a good way to get into it. And I like that it's honestly a shorter education route, too, even if you didn't have a degree to start with.
going right. to 4 years for an art degree. Hazel and I both got phlebotomy certificates last year, and I myself was pretty stoked to have a certificate to be able to draw blood and like work in the medical industry. And then I found this fun little thing where you have to have experience to get hired.
As with any industry,
and the certification class that we did didn't really count.
I would actually love to pursue phlebotomy at some point, like post-retirement. I think that would be really cool to just like end my life doing something like that.
Just being a little granny drawing blood.
Yeah.
It's something that I like still want to pursue, and I think I would have to do either like a 1 to 2 year like education internship program, or try and just find some place that will take a chance and hire me, because a lot of the places that I was looking, it starts at minimum wage and you have to have experience doing phlebotomy to get the phlebotomy job. The only way to get experience is to work.
Yeah, I feel like that's pretty common within any industry these days. It's like, oh, we only hire people with experience. Okay, well, who's going to give me experience? I just spent all this money getting my education, and now you're still not going to hire me? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I see how it is, American education system.
Solid. Moving right along, another subject I want to dive into while I've got Hazel here is one of our favorite cringy topics, dirty talking. And the classics we hear, and the really, really uncomfortable things that we hear sometimes too, or that can be hot depending on who is saying it and what situation.
I love how the original inspiration for this conversation happened in our kitchen, and now we're revisiting it in our kitchen.
Like all good conversations that emanate from the Pussy Posse, so many topics have been explored in this living room. I feel like one of the things we've been laughing about a bunch recently is like one of the most classic ones you hear. Oh, you like my big fat cock inside that tight little pussy?
I feel like that's straight up a turnoff.
Yeah. It's one that's just, it doesn't take any creativity. It doesn't, you don't have to put any thought into using that. That's one that people have been saying for so long. That's in every porn and movie. That's just kind of, it's overused. Come up with something better.
I think the hottest dirty talk to me is just pure honesty. Not like exactly like the narration, but like if something happens that we like are both clearly enjoying that they point out, then I like that.
Like, I love when people are genuinely enthusiastic about watching me come.
Yes. Okay, I had this partner and I just came super hard, and he literally, like, we paused after because I just like needed a minute, and he congratulated me. He was like, that was a beautiful orgasm.
That recognition in that moment.
And I felt so seen.
It's like so hot because it's a recognition of what you're doing, but also a recognition of how amazing that has made your partner feel too.
We literally high-fived after that. It was a great experience.
I love when you just have to stop having sex to be like, whoa, wow. That was cool.
Or when they like put it in slowly and y'all both gasp.
that gasp. There's some moments of just that straight up, we're all so enthralled by what's happening, and this is so rad that we can be a part of this enthusiasm that is really hot. Versus when people are like dirty talking because they feel like they need to narrate, or they're like, you know what I'm gonna do to that fucking later. It's like, just do what you're gonna do. Like, and or tell me while you're doing it. Be like, oh, but there's, I don't know.
There's a difference between narration and commentary, I feel like.
Exactly. I am not a Netflix show about planet Earth that I want you to know.
You don't want to do it how they do it on the Discovery Channel?
I mean, I do, but I don't want the Discovery Channel to be narrating it.
That's good. That actually made me think of this time I got fingered in a hot tub on Molly.
Oh, God. That sounds magical. And
my world was rocked.
Ooh. God, Molly and bathtub.
It was just all the sensations.
That sounds so hot.
Literally.
I feel like there is a stereotype, too, about Molly or MDMA sex, that it somehow ruins sex for you, and I
disagree.
I'm gonna
go out and disagree right now.
I think having sex on MDMA or Molly or really any drug is just its own experience, so it doesn't really take away from what sex is like when you're just both connected and completely sober as well. But man, the sensations that you can feel and the connectedness when you do Molly with somebody and you're having sex with them is just, I highly recommend. If anyone likes to do Molly but has been afraid to ruin their sexual experiences, don't be afraid.
I do feel like it requires a really specific connection with your partner, though. Like, I don't think I could do it with a rando. I love randos.
It has to be somebody that I've got, like, a lot of trust with.
Right.
And that's...
Is whiskey dick for drugs a thing, though? I feel like that could be a concern for, like,
I
men.
Think it is, yeah. Like, I think if
Penis-owning people
too much coke or too much Molly, then it can be hard to...
I know it's a thing with coke, but...
I think it's with Molly.
Not sure about MDMA.
With Molly, I feel like I've run into people with dicks not being able to come. Like, they can get hard,
but they just can't
come.
Well, okay, sex shouldn't always be about coming. Like, sometimes that's not necessarily the end goal.
My ex and I used to love going out. We would rent this place in Bend and go on, like, little Molly vacation trips. And we would just roll balls, take baths, and hang out listening to records.
Can't think of anything better.
It was great. Like, honestly, some nights we wouldn't even have sex. Sometimes we would just cuddle because cuddling felt amazing. Mm-hmm. But just being around each other in that kind of mode and being safe with somebody was really fun. Definitely not something I would recommend to do with a rando, though. Good call. Just don't do drugs with randos in general unless you really trust them.
Do you feel like doing drugs is, like, comes with a maturity thing? Do you think there's a certain age that you get where it's not cool anymore? I always thought it was going to be a phase, but now I'm like,
Since my parents have been doing drugs my entire life, no, I've never thought it was a phase. I think it's something that, like, my relationship to drugs will change a lot over the years, because it already has. Like, I've gone through phases of enjoying mind-altering substances a lot more, and then phases of enjoying being really, really clear-headed. So I think it's something that, like, I don't think I'll ever say I'm gonna stop enjoying drugs, but my relationship to them will probably fluctuate over time.
I feel like, for me, it's kind of been intertwined with, like, the music scene and these certain, like, social aspects of my life, and I know I am gonna grow out of,
like festivals,
those dynamics. Or, mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if I'll ever, you know, continue recreationally doing mind-altering substances. But then again, like, alcohol is a mind-altering substance, so it's such a subjective thing. It's just a factor of legalization or not, which I think is so stupid, because alcohol fucks your liver up and so many other organs. Like, I see it, people in the death industry, like, being in it, see people dying all the time of alcoholism, and it's honestly, I would say, just as common as, like, ODs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's even more legal and commercialized and marketed to people as well as being a fun social thing, and not being marketed as, by the way, it also has these risks, be careful.
Yeah, I think the whole capitalism aspect really fucks things up.
Yeah, totally. It's how to get people to drink as much as possible so they'll spend as much money. I feel like with, like, drugs and, like, the music scene or different communities like that, I feel like the older I get, the more I'm just learning how I like doing drugs in different places with different people. So, like, yes, I used to really like doing them at festivals, but then, like, a couple years ago, I started realizing I really like sometimes just tripping at home in my living room and hanging out with my dog for, like, 6 hours. Or, like, my dad used to do a New Year's party where he and his friends would get together on New Year's and have, like, a little communal hangout and trip. And so I like that idea of finding people who are down to explore doing drugs in other ways, not just in the same ways that I've been doing since I was like 15.
Right. I've definitely outgrown the whole like stimulation over like overstimulation vibe of being in big crowds and
wub.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very different. Oh, why? We're growing up.
I know. I was like, is this maturity?
I think it might be a sign. Well, I feel like that was a good little bit right there. Thanks for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
We'll play a couple more songs and then pop back in with some more boundary talk.
Empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now, you put water into a cup. It becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
How can we smile again? just again and have them like we used to? How can we smile again and have them like we used to?
Welcome back to Stories with Stella. As a little reminder, if anyone is interested about all the different music that I play on these episodes, I do try and keep an updated list on the Stories with Stella at KBOO.com website. The next topic I really want to dive into is boundaries. And I covered this a little bit in my previous section at the beginning of this episode, but I want to go into it a little bit deeper, and I have some quotes that I would like to share. And the first one, I'm not sure who wrote it. I found it somewhere on the internet, and it goes like this. Stop asking why they keep doing it and start asking why you keep allowing it. So I really like that one. And then the second quote by Jody Lynn, L-Y-N-N, and this is the quote. Setting boundaries is an act of liberation. While freeing yourself, you also free those with the illusion that their happiness depends on you. So one of the biggest things that has stood out to me about boundaries recently that I'm really trying to just pound into my head and just repeat this mantra to myself over and over, my boundaries have nothing to do with anyone else. A lot of times the way that we learn boundaries begins with our family and the examples that we observed growing up. But a lot of times family fails to teach us correctly because guess what? They're also just human and they're also still making mistakes as they learn. So as much as it's important to set boundaries with yourself, it's also really important to set boundaries with family, loved ones, friends, partners, coworkers, even our pets. Another big thing that's been really speaking to me a lot when thinking about boundaries and contemplating my own work around them is recognizing how I want to react if someone or even myself crosses a boundary, because it probably will happen. Boundaries are only there to let us know that a line has been crossed. And it's not so much setting a boundary about what other people can't do. It's setting the boundary, setting a very clear line of if somebody else does this, this is when I'm going to stop taking this behavior or remove myself from the situation. And it's a lot, I think, about setting boundaries has to do with recognizing that it's not about anyone else but yourself. Another really helpful thing that I've been recognizing in terms of setting boundaries is if I'm setting boundaries with somebody and they get really defensive or personal about how dare I tell them that they can't do something,
it's even more of a sign that that is somebody I need to set boundaries with. I also work on my wording too, so that when I do set a boundary, I'm making sure that it's about telling that person what I'm going to do if a certain situation comes up or something is said. It's not so much that person can say whatever they want. I can't stop anybody from doing anything that they want to do. That's the beauty of free will, is you can do what you want. But when I set a boundary and I communicate that to somebody now, I really practice on how I can focus on what part of the boundary has to do with me. So not just if this person does this one thing, but if anyone were to do this thing that pushed my boundary or crossed a line or disrespected me in some way, then I'm going to let them know this is how I will respond when this happens. So you can keep saying all the mean things you want, but just so you know, if you do say this mean thing, I'm out of here or I hang up the phone. Another little, I don't know, quote, poem, whatever you want to call it, about boundaries that's been really speaking to me. Again, I don't know where this is from. I saw this one on Twitter and it goes like this. No is a necessary magic. No draws a circle around you with chalk and says, I have given enough. I really like that because a lot of what I think about when it comes to setting boundaries is it's about what I have done and what I don't want to do. Not about what somebody else can or can't do or should or shouldn't do or how they should think about the things that they said. It's about how I respond, where my lines are. And they can be different for different people and they can also be different on different days. And making sure that I commit to communicating as my boundaries shift, because they will constantly be shifting. The only way for them to stay the same is if we didn't do anything. But by interacting with people and by living life, we're going to learn, we're going to change, and therefore our boundaries are going to change as well. And so being able to continue communicating with people if boundaries have changed over the course of a night or an hour or even 10 minutes. I have friends that I've said, hey, I'm totally down. I would love to go on a bike ride and hang out. And then I show up and I say, you know what? I don't have the energy for this. If you want to do that, go for it. I only have the energy to sit here and maybe eat some snacks. And that's my boundary. It doesn't have anything to do with them. If they still want to go on a bike ride, they have all the power to go do that. And I'm letting them know this is my boundary. And then if they want to hang out with me and their boundary isn't that they really need to go move their body on a bike, then they can choose to hang out with me. If anyone is feeling attacked or taking it personally that you're setting a boundary, again, I think that is a really, really good sign that that is somebody who you really need to set that boundary with. And the only way to get better at doing that is to just practice. Practice, 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 practice. I learned a lot about setting boundaries, like I talked about earlier, in the club, from being in an industry where you have to learn how to set boundaries or you do not do well in that industry. If you don't know how to set boundaries around how people talk to you or treat you or what you're willing to put up with, then chances are you might be in situations that do not feel good or might feel like they're crossing your boundaries often. And one of the biggest lessons I got from the club was learning how to get really comfortable setting sometimes different boundaries for different people, but setting them every time they come in and restating my boundaries to different customers over and over and over, because not everybody is going to know the same thing. Assumptions around boundaries is another one that I think is very dangerous. I think it's better to just not ever make assumptions about anything, but especially not boundaries. Please, 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 people, do not ever make an assumption about somebody's boundary. If you have a question or a thought or a concern that the boundary has changed since the last time you talked about it and you're not sure, please talk to the person. Ask them, hey, is your boundary the same? Is your boundary changed? Is there anything that we need to update? Because one of the most harmful times that assumptions can cause pain and discomfort are if you make an assumption about somebody's boundaries. And that can include you went on a date with somebody
and you hooked up with them and you had a great time, but the second time you go on a date with them, you don't automatically assume that that's going to happen unless you check in with them and say, hey, so we still on for a good time like last time? And then that gives them the option to say, yeah, or say, you know what, I kind of actually wanted to take a step back and get to know each other a little bit more.
Also, just as helpful as it is for us to communicate our boundaries to other people so that they respect them, we also have to have some awareness that we ourselves could personally cross our own boundaries. There have definitely been times where, again, as an example, I want to go hang out with somebody and I don't feel like I have the energy to do it, but I decide to go hang out anyways. I crossed my own boundary of if I'm this tired, I won't go do stuff with other people. And then I end up in a position where I'm tired and cranky and resenting the fact that I put myself in a position that I don't want to be in. So not only are boundaries really important for other people and other situations in our lives, but also with how we treat ourselves and how well we can respect our own boundaries also says a lot about how we can respect others when they communicate them as well. Thank you for tuning in and listening to Stories with Stella. And I'll be back next month to ramble on about a few more things.
I think it's all in the waves. Hey, in the way that you move and the things that you say. What we can do if you stop acting crazy. I be rude, little mama, don't hate me. Oh, no, 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 no. I think it's all in the ways. In the way that you move and the things that you say. Hey, think of what we can do if you stop acting crazy. I be rude, little mama, don't hate me.
Be posted out in Beverly. Long hair, longevity. Who I swear is a better day. Mama used to take my ass to a therapy. And now my coupe move cool, no care me. Ain't no Benz, no a Cherokee. Motherfuckers BB, so embarrassing. Bro, B3P, you a parody. Flow sweet, Booker T by a cherry tree. I'm from Fairfield Beach, where they stare at me. To the rooftop suites where the parents be. But keep watch, little homie, move carefully. They wanna feed you that taste terribly. Might move the whip through the streets to the top of the earth where the sunset. She let me watch when she yearns, right? I let them talk, get bitter, cause the kid got the success. And plus he positive. They like, fuck that, pulling up suspect. Real G's ain't concerned with a plug, yeah. You know I got it right here, homie, trust that. Deuce, deuce, 7-3, we the bloodbath. Straight spitting to the four-star women with the porn-star vision on tour. I might pull up on your pants. And last year, I was about to run away from the shit. This year, I'll be all up on the stage.
I think it's all in the ways. Hey, in the way that you move and the things that you say. Hey, think of what we can do if you stopped acting crazy. I be rude, little mama, don't hate me.
KBOO Portland.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more. If your vehicle has a clean title, we can take it as a donation. If your vehicle isn't working, we can work with that, too. Call 877-KBOO-123. That's 877-526-6123. Or go to our website, kboo.fm/vehicle.
You're listening to 90.7 FM KBOO Portland, streaming online at kboo.fm. My name is Gary. Normally at this time, you'd hear a program I do called Self-Help Radio, and that's coming up in about an hour. This past week, I had the opportunity to speak with a fellow named Adam Elk, who's in the band The Mommy Heads, and the conversation was so great, I thought I'd take some time to play some of their tunes and feature some of what Adam had to say